What's up, heretics? Welcome to the Religion of Speed podcast, an automotive news, entertainment, and quote-unquote educational podcast about grassroots racing and car culture, where we give you ways to get out and have fun with cars. I am Matt Overstreet.
And I am Chris Huffman.
All right, Chris, we have a docket that's full of new car news, actually.
That's cool. That's something we don't usually have.
Yeah, no, but there's been a lot of stuff lately. I feel like last week we didn't really touch on new cars at all, or last podcast. So there's just been a lot of new stuff coming out. It seems like, although cars are going to definitely be electric here, and we'll get into that a little more in the later in the podcast, we're giving kind of a last hurrah of fun cars.
It's cool. Like, that's what I thought about the new Z when it first came out. Like, this is probably going to be the last all-gasoline-powered Nissan Z.
Yeah, probably.
And
I mean, we were just talking last podcast that the Miata is going to be going some sort of electrification with its next generation. So
yeah, so the ND could be the last all gasoline powered Miata.
Right.
Yeah, but so, it's good to see them actually committing to it. You know, giving us one last good crop of used cars to buy off Craigslist for the next decade.
Right. Because that's definitely what we are going to be doing, and we'll just kind of get right into it with. Hyundai is kind of killing it right now, honestly, with the performance cars. Between the Genesis sedans, which all the reviewers are loving, the G70 sports sedan, I guess, is like all the reviewers are loving that thing.
What kind of power plant's in that thing?
You can either get a 2-liter turbo with a manual or automatic, or a turbo 4-cylinder 2-liter. I'm not sure what I just said now. Or a twin turbo V6, but that's only automatic.
Okay, so that's... It's a shame you can't get the V6 in a manual, but hey, at least there's a boosted manual option.
Right.
So you can at least tune it up.
Yeah. And that 2-liter is pretty stout, too. I don't know if that's the same one in the Veloster.
Oh, well, I'm not sure. But, I honestly don't follow Hyundai as much as I should. I remember being so excited about the Genesis Coupe when it came out about 10 years ago.
Right.
And that kind of revitalized my interest in the brand.
Which we were looking before the show at some used rear-wheel drive cars, RX-8s, 350Zs, S2000s.
Yeah.
And all the prices of those are going up. We didn't check out Genesis Coupes. I feel like those are still quite a bargain.
Yeah, and honestly... I was expecting those to become some of the new cheap drift missiles.
Yeah.
I remember the last time I looked at them, granted this was a couple of years ago, they were still kind of neck and neck in the used car market with the FRSs and the BRZs.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and those have been holding their value really well. I expected the Hyundai to depreciate a little bit more.
That's kind of what I was expecting, too, because there's not a whole lot of fans of those cars.
Yeah, which... That also surprised me,
yeah.
You know, because it is rear-wheel drive. You can get it with a factory Turbo 4 or an NA6. I think after 2013, the Turbo 4s put out almost 300 foot-pounds of torque.
I don't know the exact specs. I know that engine shares a lot of architecture with the Evo 10 engine.
Really? The 4B11?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's not a direct copy, but it shares a lot of stuff with it. Like, I'm pretty sure the rotating assembly is the same.
Wow, I didn't know that.
So you can build up those engines, like, really big.
Yeah, I wonder...
But you just don't ever see them.
I wonder how much crossover there is. How many parts could be used from, you know, aftermarket parts designed for the Evo could be used for the Hyundai or vice versa.
Right. I remember when the Genesis Coupe first came out, AMS was playing with them. AMS, at the time, was doing all Evo stuff. They're known for their GTRs now.
Oh, okay.
Because they switched that. But they were... They started with DSMs, you know, your Eclipses and stuff, moved to Evos and GTRs. But at the time when the Genesis Coupe came out, because those engines share architecture, they were playing around with those too. But I don't think anything much ever happened with that.
You know, I'd be interested to see what you can do building a Genesis Coupe now.
Right.
Whether it would be a better option to go with the 4 or the 6, because you could get them both in a manual.
Mm-hmm.
I've
driven a V6 Genesis Coupe, and it's a nice car.
It feels good?
Yeah, it's... Kind of like a little bit bigger Z.
Oh, okay.
Because it's a little bit longer.
So almost like a G platform, like a G35.
Yeah, actually a G30. It feels a lot like a G35.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, because the G35 was kind of softer. It didn't have the same kind of crisp handling characteristics.
More of a GT car than a sports car.
Okay. Which, hey, there's nothing wrong with that.
No. And heck, you know, some coilovers and a tune, and you have a change of how that vehicle feels. So.
Yeah. Yeah, honestly, I drove the Genesis Coupe, the 2012. The Turbo 4, back-to-back against an FRS.
Yeah.
And the 2012 was when they were only putting about 200 horsepower out.
Yeah.
So it felt like GTI fast, kind of. But it was rear wheel drive. So that's always nice. Huge fan of the rear wheel drive.
Of course.
I will say it wasn't as crisp in the corners as like the FRS was at the time.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. The FRS is way more driver focused. Like I said, I feel like what limited the Genesis Coupe is that it was based off the Genesis sedan.
Was it the same frame?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, shortened wheelbase and stuff still, but I'm pretty sure Hyundai designed the sedan and then just kind of made a coupe as well.
Which is funny because they diversified the Genesis into like its own brand entirely. Mm-hmm.
But they haven't had a coupe in that lineup. It's all been sedans since they split off.
Yeah, which is a shame. You know, I do love that coupe.
Right. I would love to see Genesis come out with a like proper sports car.
That would be really neat to see.
Right.
And I mean, maybe with this this push on the new Z and the Supra with the Turbo 4, maybe we'll see one. Maybe there'll be enough competition to justify bringing that back to market.
Well, I mean, yeah, especially when you consider that Hyundai is going with their N brand, which we're going to talk about here in a second, you know, which is directly competing with BMW's M brand for as far as like namesake goes. I mean, the guy in charge of the N division of Hyundai is the old M division guy from BMW.
Really?
Yeah, that's why it's hilarious that it's just one letter off.
It's like, well, I really liked the M. Yeah. We can't directly do that. Let's just call it an N.
Yeah, there we go. Just next one down the line. But so I feel like they could do like a, you know, M3 competitor.
An N3?
Or M... how could they do that? Because I guess there's an M4 now. Is the M4 the coupe?
So now the M4 is the coupe. The M3 is the sedan.
Yeah, that's right.
But classically, the M3 has always been a coupe.
Well, I mean, it's been available as both.
Yeah, the E36, you could get it coupe or sedan.
Yeah.
I think the E46 was a coupe only.
Yes.
And the E92 version was the M3 coupe. Then there was an E90 M3 coupe.
Yeah, I guess they were all coupes after E36.
Or M3 sedan, I'm sorry. There was a sedan with the V8. But it was a different chassis code.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was an E90 versus the E92.
Huh, okay. But yeah, I don't know. I feel like they're going after BMW and Mercedes in their sedan division.
Yeah.
Like, why not bring out a coupe and make it a performance car?
That would be really cool.
I probably couldn't afford one, but hey, in like 20 years.
Yeah. I'm just talking about pumping up future Craigslist. That's all I want.
Exactly. Yeah. That's what we need. All those, the last generation of the turbocharged cars that in 20 years are going to be dirty cheap.
Yeah.
Because fuel's going to be $8,000 a gallon.
Oh, man. Hopefully some of that synthetic fuel will come and save us on that.
Yes. I'm going to talk about that a little more later on as well in the podcast, because the more I've been thinking about it, the more e-fuels need to be a thing.
Yeah.
Not just for our preservation of sports cars, but just as a stopgap. But like I said, I'll get to that in a little bit. Right now, let's continue to talk about Hyundai's N division, because they are, like I said, crushing it. The Veloster N was the first one, and now they've since expanded. But ironically, it seems like the Veloster N is doing so well as far in the Veloster lineup. That's all they're going to be making from now on. They're dropping all other Velosters.
So you can only get a hot Veloster now?
Yep. Because I feel like that makes sense, because who's buying a base model Veloster?
You don't see that many of them.
No.
You know, I mean, it's a neat body. Like, I love that it's got two doors on one side and one door on the other side.
It's just an interesting concept.
Yeah. But yeah, I've never really been that all that excited to just see a base hatchback version of it.
Right. But the Veloster N has gotten so much, you know, credence now, and people actually like those, and they're actually selling.
Yeah.
That it makes sense to keep making them. It's kind of like how Volkswagen doesn't sell base Golfs here anymore.
Yeah, but you can still get the GTIs.
Yep.
Yeah.
I feel like they just... It's like I was talking about last podcast. I don't think there's a reason at this point to make a boring hatchback or sedan.
Yeah, because those people are just going to buy crossovers.
Right. So you might as well only make the sporting versions.
Yeah, because those are the ones that people want to see continue into production. I mean, the GTI is a bigger name than the Golf.
It really is. Yeah. I mean, it's a Volkswagen GTI. It's not a Volkswagen Golf GTI.
Yeah, which, I mean, technically it was, but that's not how anyone refers to it.
Right.
Yeah.
Ironically, though, they do refer to the Golf R as the Golf R.
Yeah.
It's not a Volkswagen R.
That is kind of weird, isn't it?
Yeah. Never really thought about that.
But. So that's going to be the only Golf there is then, is the R version.
Yeah. Because the other one, I don't think it Is it technically a Golf GTI? Or is it just a Volkswagen GTI?
Well, because...
I don't know what their branding actually says on there.
Because wasn't there a Rabbit GTI too? When they,
yeah.
Because they switched between the Rabbit and Golf names.
Yeah, they did. Yeah. Huh. That's some weird branding shit right there.
Yeah, it is.
The point is...
They should call the Golf R something else.
Right? But I feel like at this point they're stuck in that name for sure.
They could call it the GTI-R like that old Nissan Pulsar.
I mean, they already fucking ripped off R32.
That's true. They did. They have a history of ripping off Nissan.
So this one time I was at a party and a bunch of us guys were standing around and this guy showed up and my friend Chris Painter was saying, oh man, you need to check out his R32. It's fucking dope. It's twin turbo and like all-wheel drive. I'm like, yeah, it's an R32.
Right.
You know, that's what I'm thinking in my head. And I'm like, sweet, yeah, I fucking love R32s. Let's go check it out. We walk around the front of the house and it's a Volkswagen. And I'm like, that's not what I was expecting. But the fact that it's twin turboed and all-wheel drive, I'm actually interested in that now.
Yeah, and because it's not a factory twin turbo like the R32
yeah.
Nissan was.
Right.
But, I mean, yeah, twin turbo Mark IV R32.
Yeah, that thing was probably insanely fast.
Yeah, I bet that was really quick, and I bet it broke a lot.
Yeah, probably. So if you want a Veloster, you can only get an N. But maybe you want something that has the drivetrain of the Veloster N, but you're maybe not as big of a fan of that three-door thing. Well, Hyundai has two different things now. We were talking a long time ago about the Kona N, which their... small crossover SUV.
Yeah, it's like their competitor for the Rogue.
Yeah, pretty yeah. much. But now they have the Kona N, which I think is just awesome. Let me bring that up real quick. Because it's pretty much a hot hatch, just slightly lifted. And I think it's actually a good-looking vehicle that would make sense as a daily driver.
That thing does look good.
Right?
You know, it's like a... Nissan tried to do this with the Juke, and it kind of fell on its face.
Yeah, the Juke was just just too divisive of styling.
Yeah, it's and now I think it's pretty much universally hated.
Yeah, pretty much. I still kind of like them, but I just like when manufacturers do weird shit.
Yeah, the Frogger look.
I just appreciate them going out on a limb.
Yeah,
you know,
which that was definitely out on a limb.
Yeah, for sure. But the. Yeah, no, the Kona N is actually a good-looking vehicle. It is a, you know, my most hated of crossover, you know, CUV-type things. But I feel like, I don't know if they lowered this, but it just looks like a tall hatchback. Like,
I mean, that lip kit really helps bring the body lines down to the ground.
Right.
Which I think is helpful. But did they lower it? Or did they just put bigger wheels on it?
Yeah, I mean, I can't really tell from the pictures. But the reason the Kona N makes sense to me because it makes, what is it, 200 and, hold on, I can find this here, 280 freaking horsepower? 286 horsepower.
Wow.
So it's like, okay, I can take a crossover SUV if they're not insanely slow. That's my biggest problem with these crossovers. They all come with like these 98 horsepower engines.
Right. The engines that were underpowered in the hatchbacks that they're based on.
Yeah. And then they made them bigger, heavier, and all-wheel drive.
Yeah.
It's like, no, you need more power than that.
Yeah.
Like this to me is a little rally car.
It looks like a little rally car.
Right.
And it looks livable every day. You could put groceries in that. You could have some fun in the mountains.
Yeah.
Does it come with a manual or is this just a...
No, only dual clutch.
Okay.
In this one.
Which, you know, that's... As sad as that is for me, that's still something that caters to the majority of the market.
Right. And honestly, I think a dual clutch in that kind of makes sense. Like, you're not going to, even if they offered a manual, they're not going to sell hardly any of them.
Yeah, because it's a crossover.
Yeah. This is more meant to be a fun daily. And yeah, no, I would actually take one of these, which is surprising because everybody knows my hatred of crossovers.
Yeah. I mean, hearing you say that this was your least favorite, even below the Kicks, that says quite a bit.
Right. So, yeah, no, I like the Kona N because mostly because it makes 300 horsepower. But, you know, maybe you're a purist and you will not go to the crossover thing. You will not do the three-door thing. Well, Hyundai has you covered there, too, because now the Elantra is available in the N version, and it is a good-looking sedan.
Wow. That's an Elantra?
Yeah, that is an Elantra. Remember the Elantra? Remember the old Elantras? Just the biggest pile of garbage cars you've ever seen. The
most forgettable things.
Yep. And now they are a good looking mid-sized sedan. Like, look at those bucket seats, man.
Yeah, that looks nice. That looks comfy. It looks like they'd hug you. I mean, that's styling. That's
right?
Just, yeah, that's really impressive.
Aggressive styling. I like the taillight treatment. I like the front bumper treatment on it.
I'm iffy on the wheels, but they do make a statement.
Yeah, that's just kind of how modern cars are. I don't like most modern wheels that come on any car.
Yeah, they're too ostentatious or they're trying to do something too different. But it's like you were saying, it's nice when they go out on a limb.
Right.
And those wheels are definitely out on a limb.
That they are. I guess I don't like most modern car wheels because I think they're too big.
Yeah.
People are like my Fiesta, that did not need to come with 17-inch wheels.
Your Fiesta came with 17s?
Yeah. I'm running 16s right now and it looks like perfect.
Yeah. And you were talking about going down another size.
Yeah. It's just like, that's too big. It's too little sidewall. But yeah, like this front bumper on this car, like I actually think this looks better than the Veloster N personally.
Yeah. That mesh looks really nice. And what's hilarious is that's still the classic Elantra taillight.
Yeah, kind of.
They spruced it up and they made it work with these aggressive body lines.
Right.
I like that oh shit handle right there for the passenger too.
Yeah, like this almost reminds me of, it's a bit Supra-ish, Mark IV Supra.
Yeah, it's like a cockpit.
Yeah, the cockpit is very driver-centric.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, and then they put the oh shit handle on the driver, on the passenger side of the footwell so that the passenger won't impede on the driving space.
Right. Yeah, like, I don't know. Like, I think Hyundai's kind of crushing it right now.
Yeah, that looks great. They're taking risks that other people aren't.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
Yeah, like, who else is making a midsize, like, sports sedan at this point?
I mean, there's the Kia Stinger, maybe. But well, that's just under the Hyundai umbrella.
I guess, would this even be considered a midsize? The Elantra's kind of small, actually. So, like,
it's small by modern standards.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, we got to keep it within modern standards. This thing's probably twice as big as a freaking original Sonata. But, you know, the Sonata is now the size of a, I don't even know
a
what.
Tank.
Yeah. Yeah. Ridiculous.
Everything is massive now. It's like we were talking about that Civic. The new Civic's the size of the old Accord.
We'll talk about the Civic in a second here because, yeah, there's news on that too. But yeah, I don't think anybody's making a sports sedan in this size anymore.
No, it seems like everything's either huge or tiny.
Yeah, because this is Civic size. The Elantra is Civic size. So I guess this would be like a Civic Si competition?
Like an Si sedan?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because the Type R is only available in the hatch.
Okay.
Which, I mean, that's kind of a...
Yeah, that hatch is like blurring the line between sedan and hatch.
Right.
Yeah.
So I guess this is more competing with the Type R, but it is, while this car is definitely aggressive, it's not as, like, this is more sophisticated than a Type R.
You'd say more sophisticated?
Yeah.
Like, just more grown up?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I can see that.
I could see, you know, younger people are more geared towards the Type R. You know, they're like, oh, yes, the Type R is finally here. Yeah, it's the crazy Honda.
Right.
You know, this is something like some dude with a family would actually like own and drive and not feel like he's playing boy racer at the same time.
Well, and those are the people who can afford this.
True, because this is still not going to be a cheap car.
Right. It'd probably still undercut the Civic, though, I imagine.
I would think so. If they're not, that would be ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know, and if you do want the crazy aggressiveness, then the Veloster N is out there for you.
Yeah.
So.
And a hatchback makes it useful, even if it's quick and small.
Right.
You know, you can still fold the seats down and move furniture or carry tires in a hatchback.
Right. Yeah. And I think the Veloster's hatch is actually pretty decent, too. So that's just crazy to me that there's a manufacturer out there right now making nearly 300 horsepower, quote unquote, affordable cars in a sedan, sport hatch, or crossover. Just pick your flavor.
That is really cool, and that's something that I'd like to see more manufacturers do, but
right,
sadly that's kind of opposite direction from the way a lot of them are moving.
Yeah, a lot of them are moving to those gray blobs we were talking about a few podcasts ago.
Those gray electric self-driving blobs.
Right. So I mean, Elantra N should be starting at 30,000.
Okay. Yeah. And what's a Type R go for?
Well, I mean, with dealer markup, like 60.
Woof.
They're still marking those things up like crazy.
That is insane. I mean, I know with the computer chip shortage and, you know, just the genuine supply chain problems we've had because of COVID,
right?
Everything is too expensive right now. But when things come back down, it'll be interesting to see where the dust settles and what actually is affordable.
Right.
Because, yeah, right now it's, you know, I've talked to some car salesmen and they're just like, yeah, selling cars is easy now. We've only got 10 cars on the lot.
Right. Yeah. Which one do you want? One of these six?
Right. And they're all marked up like crazy and they don't have to make a deal.
Yeah.
Because they know that somebody else will come along and pay that ludicrous markup. I talked to one Toyota salesman who said the only two Tacomas they had on their lot were like, you know, the TRD performance package marked all the way up to like $60,000 and people were going to pay it.
Did you know, I don't know if it's still the case because prices are fluctuating so quickly right now. At least for a brief period of time, a four-year-old Tacoma would sell for more used than the MSRP of a brand new Tacoma.
I believe it. I believe it. Even before COVID, you could say a two-year-old 4Runner was
at least as much. Yeah, at least did not lose any value.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah. I drove a newer Tacoma. I think it was a 2017 or 2018. Came in. I don't know what exactly happened on this thing, by the way. Somebody else in some other state did some work to it and somehow screwed up the hard line for the fuel line.
Wow.
So the flex line wouldn't clip into place anymore.
So it just had a massive fuel leak and like to the point where it wouldn't run?
Oh, it just like popped off eventually.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So anyways, the point was I had to put a fuel line in it and then I got to drive it. And I was like, I kind of get why people like the Tacoma so much. They drive really well. It doesn't feel like a car. It feels like a truck, but it doesn't feel like a Jeep.
Right. Not like something big and cumbersome.
Not like something that you're afraid you're going to die driving. Like it drives well in the city, but it still feels like a truck, but it's not huge. Like it's kind of the best of all worlds.
Yeah.
Like I get why they're so popular, but also I don't understand why they hold their value quite so much.
I mean, that's just the Toyota thing.
Yeah.
It's crazy how any Toyota holds its value. And then in Colorado, any four-wheel drive.
Yeah, that especially.
So when you combine the two in this state, it's just insane.
That's why I do think we're going to see a lot of Kona Ns around.
I think we'll see a lot of them too.
The all-wheel drive. I mean, yeah. How many Nismo Jukes do you see around here?
A surprising amount.
Right?
Like a ludicrous amount of people bought the Nismo version of the Juke.
Because it had more power than any other crossover. It had all-wheel drive.
Yeah.
It was small, good on fuel. Like, that's what people want.
And if you like the styling of the Juke, they kind of, you know, they made it a more aggressive-looking frog.
Right. You know? Aggressive frog.
Yeah, it had its red trim and had the nice seats.
But for the people in this state that just swear you need all-wheel drive to get around, which I have proven you don't.
No,
you have proven even more that you don't because you have rear-wheel drive.
Yeah, I've gotten to work on bald summer tires on my BRZ.
Yeah, I mean, slowly.
It was very slowly and very sketchy, and I made a lot of Jeep owners angry.
But for those people that, you know, they require all-wheel drive.
Right.
But they didn't want a super slow crossover.
Right.
That was the only option. And there's those people. Those Jukes are getting the age where they're probably dying off. Those CVTs are finally giving in.
For the second or third time.
Yeah.
This time it's not under warranty.
So if they want anything like that, Kona N's the only option out there.
Yeah, I think we'll see a lot of them. I see a fair amount of just base Konas around already.
Actually, I like the base Kona too. I like the electric Kona.
I haven't seen the electric one.
Yeah, those are actually really nice too. And they make a lot of torque.
I bet.
They make like 350 foot-pounds of torque.
I wonder what their range on a charge is.
I looked it up a while ago. It was decent. I don't remember what it was, but I remember because I was considering living in the mountains, and I was considering getting one of those for commuting back and forth. So it was good enough for a long mountain commute.
Okay. So as long as you charged it at work during the day?
I think I could do a single charge back and forth.
That's cool.
Yeah, from what I was calculating at the time.
And yeah, that would really bring down your commute costs.
So just so people don't think I hate electric cars, because I think I might be getting that reputation a little bit. I have an idea that I want to build I want to buy a Nissan Leaf.
Okay.
Because you can buy a Nissan Leaf for like $4,500, by the way.
Yeah, a used one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because everybody's afraid of the batteries.
Right.
Because, well, you described.
Yeah, the batteries. Which I found out something interesting. While I can't source and sell the whole battery assembly over the shelf, I can source and sell the individual cells.
Oh, well, shit, that's all you need.
Yeah, I didn't realize that. Okay. Because most people, they never ask about the cells.
Right.
But I had a technician ask me to quote them out, and then I had the Leaf certified technician come back, and we went over it. There are 11 different cells in the battery I was looking at.
Mm-hmm.
And you can buy individually each one of these cells.
Okay.
About $700 to $900 a piece.
Oof.
Yeah, they're expensive.
Yeah.
But I can't sell a Leaf battery over the counter, a complete battery, to anyone, not even a shop.
Well, because I spent some time looking, because I was like, well, shit, those are dirty cheap. That would be kind of a nice little commuter.
Yeah.
But I'm like, battery's eventually going to go out. So, you know, like a Prius battery, there's Dorman makes Prius batteries now. They remanufacture them.
They do. They're no good, but they do.
They do. The point is, there are options. Yeah. But there are no options for the Leaf. It's just zero options.
It's just Nissan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. My idea, though, was, like, I don't like the Leaf. Like, overall looks of it, like, it's a bad-looking car.
Yeah, it's like they designed it to be boring.
Yeah. So, what I want to do is just take the Leaf drivetrain, because it's actually a really nice drivetrain. It's the whole inverter, motor thing. It's front-wheel drive. You know, it swaps into a place of a front-wheel drive engine, pretty much.
Okay.
Very easily, looks like. And I want to get an old Nissan Pulsar NX.
Oh, yeah.
You know those ones?
With the pop-up headlights from the late 80s?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The little wagon version?
I don't know if I've seen the wagon version.
Oh, yeah. Pulsar NX.
My dad used to have one of the little two-seater Pulsars.
Yeah.
Back in the day.
So it's the same car, but they came with a little hatch add-on that you can make it a wagon.
Oh, that's so cool.
Right?
And put a Leaf drivetrain in that.
Yeah, because these things were slow as shit. They came with like a 1.3 liter, like 100 horsepower engine. But like, so it would be faster. And I mean, this car just kind of looks like it was a retro electric car almost.
Yeah, it looks 80s futuristic.
Yeah, it's got that almost DeLorean look going to it.
Yeah.
And I just think that would be a perfect little electric car to putz around in.
That'd be a fun project too.
Yeah. So that's on my project list.
Okay.
So it's not like I hate electric cars. Like, I like the idea of electric drivetrains.
Yeah, I still want one of the electric Ford Lightnings.
Right.
I think that would make my life dramatically better.
I just, you know, have problems with people thinking that electric cars are going to save the world, because as of right now, they're not.
No, the way the business model, which, yeah, I think we talked about that last podcast, is the way the business model's set up. It's just designed to create a mountain of e-waste.
Right.
Because they don't want you fixing your electric cars. Which is, you know, we kind of had similar issues to that with American cars in the 70s. They didn't want you to keep your American car running, so they made them purposefully break down. People started buying Japanese cars because they didn't break down.
Right.
And then everyone started trying to make something somewhat reliable.
I will add a caveat to that. I don't think the American cars were being built purposely to break down. I think they just had such poor... They thought they were on top of the world and didn't have to do anything.
Okay.
They just had this, like, complex about them, where like Titanic complex. Like, we don't have to fucking put, like, too much engineering into this. We make American cars. People buy these things like crazy. Who gives a shit?
Just because they're American.
Yeah.
So, do you think arrogance was their downfall?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
But then the Japanese car came in and just fucking decimated them.
Well, when your entire economy gets destroyed and you have to rebuild from scratch, you end up coming to the game with some humility.
Yeah. Well, and then just the way the Japanese do things, like, is just completely different than any other country. They're like, we're going to do this and we're going to make it perfect.
It's not good. No, perfect.
No, perfect. And if we don't make it perfect, we're going to punish our employees and, you know, they're going to jump out windows and commit suicide. Listen, I'm not saying Japanese work culture is a good thing, because it's not. Those people are insane and like.
But we do get to benefit from it by driving around in reliable Hondas and Toyotas.
This is true. So, speaking of reliable Hondas, the next generation Civic has been unveiled, which it looks kind of more just like an updated version of the Civic we got now.
Yeah, it doesn't look bad. I like those taillights.
Apparently, we are not getting a hatchback SI.
That's kind of sad.
Right? I guess... And this comes from, of all places, Honda Canada Incorporated's Twitter. That's wow. how they just, like, you know, brought that out. Somebody asked if there was going to be a SI hatch, and they're like, no. And that's all we got to go off of.
Thank you, Canada.
But, yeah, no, like, that kind of sucks, because I feel like I do see quite a few SI hatches driving around.
I like the old Honda hatchbacks.
Yeah.
Like the EG and EK hatches when you see them rolling around.
I mean, the fact they don't make a two-door hatch in America is kind of sad. It's all four-door hatches now. But
it is. It's like not everybody who wants a hatch wants a station wagon.
Right. Yeah, this is definitely more of a wagon than a hatch.
Yeah. And it looks massive.
Yes, this looks like an Accord.
Yeah, it does. Actually, I think it looks just like the Accord Cross Tour used to look.
Yeah, pretty much. I'm pretty sure they just made the Accord Cross Tour and called it a Civic again.
Yeah, that's remarkable how close that looks to an Accord wagon. Maybe they're, because the Type R is still wagon only, correct?
That'll be a hatch, I'm pretty sure.
So,
they haven't unveiled the new Type R with this updated body yet. So
okay.
We have yet to see. Maybe, I can't imagine them changing that from the hatch, though.
Yeah, because the Type R, I know the EK Type R, that was a hatch only, right?
I think they're all hatch only.
Like, I just all back to the beginning of the Type R. Because I know the little cheese wedge hatch Civic Si that we got in the early 2000s.
Yeah.
That Type R was pretty, people, you loved that Type R.
Yeah.
It had
they loved the engine.
Yeah. Well, it had that, it didn't look great, but
yeah,
it had that really weird rally-inspired shifter coming out of the dashboard.
Yeah. Those manual shifters on those were always fucking weird. It looked like that was just a minivan disguised as a Civic, though.
It did look like a minivan.
Right. So, I don't know, but if that means just no SI version, if they're going to have the Sport, because I do see a lot of hatch Sports driving around, which are kind of just like a budget SI. They have the same engine.
Really? It's got the same dual over head cam engine?
Yeah, it's still got the same 1.5 turbo.
Wow. Okay.
The Sport does. Yeah. So, I don't know. Maybe they shouldn't sell enough SI hatches to warrant it.
Well, I figured the Type R would steal some sales from the SI.
True.
Because that's always what we had instead of the Type R.
Like, yeah.
The SI was the best Civic we could get in America. And a lot of times it was just kind of a nerfed down version of the Type R.
Right.
And now that we've got the full hardcore Type R Civic, the SI just seems, you know, less attractive.
Yeah, that's very true. I hope they still keep making SI coupes, though.
Yeah,
that was one of the last like small coupes you can buy too.
And the Civic coupes across the generations have always looked cool.
Yeah,
like I feel like they've done a good job making them at least not boring. Whenever there's a good one, because the EG coupe was great, the EK coupe looked cool. I mean, honestly, I like the one from like 2008 with the spaceship windshield.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. No, I like that coupe. Kayla had one of those.
Really?
Yeah. Just the base model coupe, but yeah, that was a nice looking little car.
Yeah, and they, I mean, it was so weird to be inside it though, because the windshield slopes down so far.
Yeah. Yeah, you can't touch the windshield.
Yeah.
You have to like lean way forward.
But it had a really neat look to it.
Yeah.
Like it just kept getting rounder and rounder.
Right.
I made a joke in like 2010 that the next Civic was just going to be an orb.
Just a little tic-tac.
Yeah, just a tic-tac on wheels.
But yeah, hopefully they keep making the coupe. I like the fact that they still make the coupe. But if you want a SI hatchback, that's no go. You either need to go probably Sport or all the way to Type R. No in between.
Man, that is sad, but I'm just glad we got the Type R finally. Yep. Hey. Even if it is this massive thing with too much wheel, too much weight, and too much price, I'm just happy that the Type R nameplate made it across the ocean.
True. Yeah, it's not the best Type R they ever made, but
yeah,
it's still a dope car. And while this isn't a Type R, Acura has been working really hard to revive their Type S branding.
Okay, yeah.
Which kind of used to mean something with like the RSX a little bit and stuff like that.
Yeah, there was the TL Type S and the RSX Type S.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the RSX Type S was the Integra Type R. It was the closest we could get to it
pretty
in the
much.
States. Yeah.
Yeah. So kind of like the SI version of the Civic more than anything. But yeah, I feel like Acura is really trying to move their brand upwards a little bit more, because maybe it was a little too close to Honda.
And yeah,
they need to make it a little more up brand. So they're trying really hard with their Type S badging to make some actually badass cars. And the new 2021 Acura TLX Type S sounds like it's going to be pretty badass.
Yeah, this one's the all-wheel drive one. We saw a couple of these running at Pikes Peak.
Yeah, so those were the demo cars, but 355 horsepower, twin turbo V6, and torque vectoring all-wheel drive. Like, that is a hefty amount of horsepower in a sedan.
Yeah, and an all-wheel drive Acura.
Yeah.
Like, that's exciting.
Yeah, and all the TLXs or TLs or, you know, what a TSX is.
Yeah.
Oh, TSX wagon, by the way, like last generation TSX wagon. That's on my list. I love those cars. They're so gorgeous.
You got a factory K24?
Yeah. I'm trying to remember what engine was in that, but yeah. This TLX Type S. Their branding is getting a little bit BMW-ish for me, yeah. Where I don't remember what model is what.
Too many letters.
Yeah.
But that was the kind of thing that they did, because they used to have the Acura CL 2.2 and Acura CL 3.2.
Right.
And then the TL, yeah, and then they had an MDX and an RDX and a TSX.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's too much. Yeah. Like, it's alphabet soup at this point.
It really is.
What happened to naming cars? I like names.
Well, I think it's just a thing that they do when a company wants to go with a luxury brand, is they stop naming it and they start giving it letters and numbers, like all those Lexuses that are just alphabet soup here and are just Toyotas with cool names in Japan.
Right, and all the Nissans the same way, all the Infinities.
Yeah, all the Infinities, yeah. They're Nissans with cool names in Japan.
Right.
And here we get like the Infiniti G35 was a trim level of the Skyline,
right,
in Japan.
Yeah, no, that was a Skyline. The M was, what the fuck was the M over there?
The big sedan?
The big sedan.
I can't remember its name, but
yeah,
I know it had the same power plant as, you know, the was that one a rear-wheel drive, the M35?
Oh, yeah. All the Infinities have been rear-wheel drive.
Wow. So you had a rear-wheel drive, like, V6 out of a Z, basically.
Right. Or V8 in the M.
Oh, yeah.
You can get the big V8.
Wow, like the VK motor?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, they made an M56 at one point. And then, of course, the M45, which was the smaller V8.
Yeah.
But, yeah, M56S is on my list of cars to own.
Yeah, that's a Titan motor in a sedan.
Right? They're fucking quick.
Yeah.
I mean, the Titans are quick.
Right? That's a torquey motor.
Yeah.
Yeah, every time I drive one, I'm like, I need to swap this into my 240.
Yeah, that is you don't see that very often, though.
It's an expensive swap.
Yeah.
And I looked into it. You have to relocate basically everything.
Oh, okay.
It takes up the whole bay. You even have to put in a low-profile brake booster.
Really?
Yeah, it takes up that much space.
And when you can get a 5.3 GM engine for... Yeah. Half the price and half the work.
Yep, and it'll just bolt right in.
Right.
It bolts up to the same transmission you were going to use.
Right.
And your, I think engine management really drives up the cost on the VK swap.
Yeah, I could see that. You probably have to go completely custom.
Yeah, because with a GM motor, you can just run a GM ECU.
Right. Yeah, just factory ECU, HP tuners, and you're good to go.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which, as long as you don't want to pass emissions, which we're going to get that in a minute. Which that would never pass emissions anyways, but yeah, no. And once again, we're seeing, I think, the last hurrah here for Acura, as far as before they go electric, this is probably going to be their last big push in gasoline technology,
which I really think Acura is kind of set up for this to right. go electric.
Yeah.
Like, I think, you know, a lot of the other brands might have more growing pains. I think Acura is going to be one of the brands that's going to go forward into the electric future very smoothly.
I agree, because Acura drivers, for the most part, aren't performance-oriented at all.
Right, except for you've got the TL crowd.
Yeah, but that's a pretty small crowd.
It is, but those people are diehard fans.
Yeah.
They love their Acura TLs.
But, like, Acura has never been focused. Like, I remember a quote from, it was the CEO of Acura at one time, saying how people don't care if it's a front-wheel drive or a rear-wheel drive car.
I could see that.
And I'm like, for your brand, I can see that.
Yeah, for the Acura brand.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the Volkswagen brand in that case, too.
Yeah.
Where they just, it's like, no, people here just bought a car.
Yeah.
Like, and they don't care how it goes fast, just that it goes fast.
Yeah, I could see that. So, yeah, the fact that there's a 355 horsepower twin-turbo Acura, and people are just kind of like, meh. Like, it's not really big news, you know?
Right. Like, I didn't know that they made an all-wheel drive TL until we saw that one at Pikes Peak.
Yeah.
Like, oh, really? Yeah, I was like, I knew that, because the TLs have been front-wheel drive for so long.
Yeah, Acura's had their, they call it their super handling all-wheel drive.
Yeah, the with the all-wheel steering, kind of?
No, just all-wheel drive. It's okay. It's a torque vectoring all-wheel drive.
Oh, okay, okay.
It has clutch packs in the back, so it can vector the torque to the outside wheel.
Okay, so it's more about traction than actually providing four-wheel power all the time.
Yeah, kind of. Okay. I mean, it's about putting the power to the wheels that need it the most.
Okay.
You know, I just always love it because on the back of it, it has a badge that's SH-AWD.
Shawd.
Shawd. I just want to put a Y on the end of it.
Yeah.
Shoddy.
I'm sure somebody's done that.
Somebody somewhere has to have done that. I am not that clever, so.
That's hilarious. I do love those taillights.
I like this car.
This thing looks good.
It's very aggressive for an Acura.
And the wheels remind me of the Aston Martin. Actually, the back end reminds me of the Aston Martin Giulietta.
Alfa Romeo.
Ah, man.
Yeah, no, the back end does look like that Alfa, yeah, for sure.
I can't believe I said Aston.
Yeah, you know, foreign, starts with an A, Acura, but Aston, yeah,
even
Alfa.
The badge in the middle, the way they did that.
Right, yeah. This is like probably the poor man's Alfa Romeo, or the man that doesn't like to go to the repair shops, yes. Alfa Romeo.
The person who wants a reliable Alfa Romeo.
Right. Which, and that gold color they have on this press car, I love that color.
Yeah, I like that. I really like the wheels, too.
Yeah, this is a good-looking car. It's probably going to cost a bajillion dollars because that's, you know, where Acuras are competing now with, like, your BMWs and your Audis and stuff like that, so.
They're like the people who want that level of quality but don't care about the status that the badge brings.
Right. If anything, I don't know, the people that buy an Acura, I look at considerably differently than the people that buy a BMW.
Yeah.
You know, the people that buy the Acura, they're probably going to hang on to that car for like 10 years.
But it's going to run for 10 years.
Yeah, exactly.
Reliably.
So, like, we want a nice car,
yeah,
but we're not just throwing our money away at repair bills and buying a new car every 3 years and stuff like that.
Yeah, a lot of the BMW and Mercedes owners are either people who have enough money to pay their car off inside 3 years.
Right.
Or the type of people who are just going to roll that debt into the next car loan, and they know that when they buy it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I think BMW owners, honestly, most of them just lease their car.
Yeah.
Those are mostly leases.
You think? Like all the new ones?
Yeah. Most of those people just lease their cars and trade them in for another one.
Just for the extent of the warranty.
Yeah, exactly.
That makes sense.
I mean, if you have the money, like, that's the way to do it. That's the way to do BMW ownership, in my opinion, is lease the things.
If you're going to go new?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if you're going to go used, just know how to work on cars.
Yeah, know how to work on cars or have a lot of money.
Yes. So this Acura TLX, I always want to call it TSX, TLX Type S, is going to be starting at $53,000. Probably rise up to about 55,000 with all options and stuff.
So that means you're kind of undercutting its German competition too.
Yeah, because I mean, BMW, M3
sedan
40 or M435i M420. I don't freaking know what their numbers are anymore. It's like the non M. But like sporty version of the series.
Yeah, because now M is a trim level.
Right.
As well as a model.
Yeah.
Which is not confusing at all.
No.
Yeah.
No, it's fine. People understand it.
Yeah.
Well, all that the people need to know is they come into the dealership and the salesman directs them towards the most expensive car.
Right.
That's all they need to know.
Yeah. And then when they decide that costs too much, we go one level down.
Right.
Which still has an M badge. So that's all they care about.
Yeah. So this is going to compete probably more with like your, they say in this article, like the Genesis G70 sedan.
Okay. And they're saying a Cadillac CTS-V. Okay.
Yeah. But Cadillac CTS-Vs, you know, those are another monster. You know, that's for if you want a lot of power with maybe a little less luxury. I feel like Cadillac's upping their game, but it's still at the end of the day, an American sedan.
Yeah.
It suffers compared to its German and even Japanese counterparts, in my opinion.
Yeah, they're not quite up to the same standard on the interior, but it comes with an LS.
Right. It comes with a freaking supercharged 600 horsepower craziness.
If you wanted a Corvette, but it doesn't make practical sense to buy one, you can't convince your spouse to let you buy one.
Right. We got you.
We got you.
But if you don't want to spend quite that much money, and if Hyundai you just can't bring yourself to buy a Hyundai, which I understand. There's still a lot of people out there that just can't get behind Hyundai being a legit brand at this point.
Well, they produced so much crap for so long.
They did.
And no, they don't do the same crap that they used to do, but it is hard to get over that.
And they're still not, they have their issues. A lot of Hyundais I see that come in with like over 100,000, they're starting to fall apart.
Yeah, and I'm told that at the Hyundai dealership, they're replacing engines like Nissan's replacing CVTs.
Yeah.
Which, you know, behind our shop at any given moment, there's at least, you know, 10 to 12 CVT cores ready to go back.
Right.
We get them picked up about 25 at a time every couple of weeks.
Yeah, I believe it. So, so if you can't get behind the Hyundai name and you want something that's a little more traditional hot hatch.
Right.
I mean, this is the traditional hot hatch.
This is the OG hot hatch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
2022 Volkswagen GTI is the Mark 8, as people, the cool kids call them. officially out, getting reviews. And hey, imagine that. It's slightly better than the Mark 7.5.
Slightly better.
Yep.
Slight improvement.
Yeah, that's I mean, that's about what we were expecting.
Yeah.
Like, that's how the GTI's been. It just slow, incremental, better
performance. Oh, it's got 10 more horsepower.
Right?
Yeah. And you know, the GTI is a good formula. Like, so you don't have to reinvent the wheel for every GTI. No,
you really don't.
It's a front-wheel drive hatchback with good fit and finish on the interior that handles really well.
Yes. I can't believe how a friend of the show, Hamza, he has a Mark 7.5 GTI, brand new pretty much. Just it's just got a tune on it and some sticky tires, and I just can't believe the performance out of that car.
They're quick.
Yeah.
And they handle beautifully. My dad had a Mark 6, and I just got pretty reliable oversteer out of it going up a mountain, which on a front-wheel drive car really says something. You know, I never had issues understeering in this thing because the suspension was tuned well enough. You know, torque steer, sure, a little bit.
Right.
But that's just because I don't like to drive with the traction control off.
Yeah. Yeah, compared to, like, my Fiesta, I mean, the GTI is a little bit bigger car than my Fiesta, but, like, they can fit so much more tire. They got so much more power. It's like, I get why the GTI is, you know, the most popular hot hatch pretty much ever.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, they're great cars to drive.
It created the market segment and still sits on top.
Right. I mean, granted, I still have worries about, you know, long-term Volkswagen ownership.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's problematic.
Unfortunately, they've gone down the same route as BMW of, you know, it's good for like 4 years. And then it just starts to disintegrate around you.
That Mark 6 that you had in the shop where the entire front end exploded because the owner hit a pothole.
Yeah, I mean, that was pretty bad.
Yeah. Well,
that's just the design flaw in all front-wheel drive Volkswagens where the radiator support,
it's plastic, right?
Well, it's plastic, but it also, like, just the way it's designed, it can easily just fall out the bottom if you like hit like a parking divider or something like that.
Yeah.
And then there's nothing holding it in from the top.
There's no safety.
Yeah, so all that stuff can just like fall out,
and that's your radiator.
Yeah, we've seen that multiple times. And it's not a durable piece is the problem. It's a fragile little piece of plastic that can get easily damaged, and then everything just falls out.
And it's on the front of the car.
Right.
So it sees all the things that would damage it.
Yeah, exactly.
My dad, I told him the story about that, and he said, yeah, he had a piece of retread, and, you know, his radiator core support came off.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's not something that you can have just fail.
Right. That's not something that normally happens with other cars.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of cars, if the radiator core support breaks, that's a unibody and the thing is totaled.
Right. And there's a lot of cars like that.
Yeah.
And I mean, a lot of cars these days are coming with like plastic radiator supports and stuff. But yeah, there was a time and place where it was all metal.
Yeah. So now they're all made of Lego.
Yep. But hey, it's cheaper to make. So, but yeah, no, nothing much really to say about the new GTI. It looks like a GTI, you know, it's updated, makes more power, more traction. The thing that I'm kind of actually excited about is what we were talking about earlier, the Golf R.
All-wheel drive. Is the front-wheel drive on the GTI bugging you? You can have all-wheel drive.
Right?
Yeah.
And you can have a lot more horsepower, 315 horsepower out of the new Golf R.
Wow, that's an STI killer.
Yeah.
I mean, and they always kind of have. You can still get it with a manual.
Yeah, that's what surprised me is they are actually still offering a manual. I thought for sure they would phase that out for the dual clutch.
Yeah,
at least in the R. I can see the GTI still being a manual, but I could see the R there being like, oh, well, this is the best performing one. You get a dual clutch.
Right. Yeah. And I thought that they were saying that the last generation was going to be dual clutch only when they were announcing that.
Yeah.
But yeah, you can still get this in a manual. I wonder if you can completely disengage the stability control, because that was an issue people had with the last generation Golf R.
Yeah, I mean, that's still a problem with the Mark 7.5. You can't. Hamza has trouble with that at the track all the time.
Really? So his will come on while he's autocrossing?
Yeah. Even there's like some crazy way that you can like quote unquote turn it all the way off, but then it'll just randomly turn itself back on, it seems like. So,
while it's running?
Yeah.
Wow.
So they're not so hot on whole, you know, dismissing the traction control.
Which there should at least be a track setting, even if, you know, and this would be a very Volkswagen thing to do, like they did with the GTR when it came out in Japan, where you couldn't disengage everything unless the GPS recognized that you were at a racetrack.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, and it would automatically turn it all off once you rolled on to a racetrack.
Yeah, I remember that for the GTR.
Yeah.
I wonder if that was... You didn't really hear about that after, like... The first year.
I think that was just in the Japanese models.
Okay.
I think in the American models, you could turn it off. Which, of course, once you get into tuning, you know, none of this becomes an issue.
Right, of course.
You know, you can just tell the ECU to have it all off all the time. But, I mean, this thing looks nice. And, you know, it's $45,000, which is... really expensive, but
yeah, it's a lot of freaking money.
But that's about how much you'd spend on an STI.
True.
So I'm glad it's there in the market. Again, you know, it's the kind of thing we can't pay for right now, but
eventually,
yep, in the used car market. And one thing we can always count on with Volkswagens is they will depreciate faster than Japanese cars.
That they will. Of course, they depreciate for a reason, unfortunately.
Right, because they just fall apart after 4 years.
I always go back and forth on the Golf R about whether I think Volkswagen should make them more aggressive or if I am like proud of their restraint. Because the Golf R just looks like a GTI. It just has an R badge.
It does. So you're saying on their styling, not on their engineering.
Yeah, no, on the styling side of things.
Because they could be like Hyundai and just give it a bunch of red stripes and racing seats and everything.
You know, it's the R. This is the top of the line racing, like crazy model.
Yeah.
And it just looks like a GTI. There's, from the outside, honestly, like the current Golf R's I see on the road, if it wasn't for that R badge, I would not know it's a Golf R.
They do look really conservative.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. I've probably seen half a dozen Golf R's and not even noticed that they're Golf R's.
Right.
Which, you know, it's kind of like... You're right. There's an argument on both sides. It's like they could go out on a limb. They could make something kind of wild or, you know, they could. It's like the Volkswagen Phaeton.
Yeah.
You know, that was a really expensive car. But looking at it from the outside, you're like, oh, well, OK, it's a Passat.
Right.
You know, but it was something you would buy instead of, you know, a 5 Series BMW or E-Class Mercedes.
Yeah. No, those were... crazy cars.
Because I think they had the W12 engines in them.
Yeah, you could get them with that, yeah.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's kind of a Volkswagen thing to do.
Yeah, they are a little more subdued in their image.
Yeah, it's like, I think regular car reviews called it Stealth Wealth.
Stealth Wealth, yeah.
Yeah.
For the Phaeton, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and even the Golf R, like you said, that's a $45,000 car.
Yeah, and it looks like a $20,000 hatchback.
Yeah.
With the exception of those gorgeous, gigantic wheels.
They are gigantic. I think I said those are 19s?
19s.
Like I said,
with summer tires.
19-inch wheels. So.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't know.
Which I might be with you. If I bought one of these, I'd probably put a smaller set of wheels on it. Because I don't even think I can see the tire in these images.
Right? It's just, it's all wheel.
It's all wheel in there.
No, an 18 with a little bit stickier tire, I think, would be... Yeah. That would make that thing a killer at the track.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a lot of wheel.
Right.
Which, have you heard about Formula One talking about going to a larger size wheel?
Yep. They're going to next year.
Yeah.
Finally.
Which is, it's interesting. They're saying that it has the potential to cut the car's lap times by a couple of seconds.
Yeah. The only reason they have such small wheels is just because of the regulations. It's not really because they're advantageous. They just made it work what's within the rules, you know?
Okay, so you think that things will actually work their way up better with a larger wheel and tire setup?
Yeah, I think it's a lot going to be a lot better.
Okay.
It's going to be a lot different suspension tuning, though, because a lot of their suspension flex is in the tire right now.
Right. So now they're going to have larger suspension components to counteract that.
Right. To absorb more of the impact and stuff.
Because
they're going to be rattling the cars apart.
Because they designed a damper to work with the vibration that's created by the wheel and tire setup they have now. J damper, right?
The J damper.
Yeah, it's supposed to be I don't know much about it, but it's supposed to be a damper that helps prevent side-to-side oscillation created by having such a thick sidewall.
Huh, okay. I don't know if I've heard anything about that.
But so they're saying it's going to be larger suspension components because the tire's not going to soak up as much of these vibrations.
I would think so, yeah. I don't know. There's a lot of changes next year in Formula One. A whole new car, so...
That'll be interesting to see how that affects the teams.
Right. Yeah, I'm curious to see how that shakes up the running order.
Yeah.
You know, because right now Red Bull is actually competing with Mercedes this year, which is exciting. And McLaren's actually kind of on the up and up as well. But, you know, next year, all new cars. So who knows? All that development they put into the old cars doesn't matter anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's not like just a few revisions like they make every year.
No, this is all new.
Completely different. So we're getting new NASCAR and new Formula One next year.
Yeah, shake things up. Why not?
Yeah, that'll be cool to see.
Speaking of shaking things up, we talk about it every podcast, the car world getting shaken up. Gas-powered cars are going away. And now the EU is proposing no gasoline or diesel engines by 2035.
Well, that is steep.
Right?
That is,
for all the EU.
Yeah, the entire European Union, that's really steep. And, you know, it's like we were saying earlier, by 2035, the electric cars will be more dominant on the market.
Yeah, I mean, I think even if they didn't make the sales ban, by 2035, it seems like every manufacturer is aiming for that anyways.
Right, right.
So...
Because there's, I think Ford said by... 2020 or no not it was by 2030
yeah
it was even closer they were gonna try to go all electric.
Yep. GM's doing 2035. I think Volkswagen is aiming for sooner.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, this was kind of inevitable, so I'm not really surprised by that, but it's just more signs of the time that, you know, and of course this is just gonna be a sales ban, so you can't sell a new gasoline diesel engine. Of course, you could still drive them.
Right. So the used car market will still be there.
Right.
Which will be interesting to see what it does for these used gasoline prices, because I've always looked to Europe as kind of where I could go to buy these unobtainium rare BMWs and Porsches that we got so few of in the States.
Yeah.
Like the 1M Coupe, there were, I think, 3,000 examples made worldwide, and less than 500 made it to America. It was 400 and change.
Jeez.
So they're definitely an incredibly rare car. But I've always wanted to drive one. So I've thought, oh, well, if I go to Germany, maybe I could get my hands on one of those.
A little bit higher chance.
Yeah.
Smaller concentration, higher number.
Right. Right. And the same goes for the Z3 and Z4 M coupes, which is hilarious because those were built in South Carolina, but there's more of them in Germany.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's hilarious.
And I've wanted to, you know, go to Europe and take advantage of these higher numbers in the used car market. But I'm wondering if by banning these, you know, by the time I can afford to do that, which would be probably in the 2030s at some point.
Right. Yeah.
If the gasoline powered cars will have spiked because there's a cap on it now.
Right.
But it'll be nice to see, you know, the EU cracks down on, any sort of gasoline or diesel powered emissions a lot more strictly than we see here in the States, which I heard there was actually a recent scandal where they said BMW, Volkswagen, and Mercedes collaborated to not improve EGR systems as much as they could have.
Okay.
Which is kind of crazy, you know? It's like,
why would they, though?
Exactly. Why would they put that money into developing an EGR system that's going to make it harder to make power, harder to sell their cars, more expensive to sell their cars if they're not required to?
Yeah.
And yeah, why would, and if one brand pushed really hard, then the government would see that and require everyone to do it. So I kind of see it from their perspective there. you know, Volkswagen's kind of fresh off this Dieselgate thing.
Right.
So I don't want them to be pressured into doing something that they don't have to do, especially when we're seeing electric cars proliferate.
Yeah.
It's like, do we really need to nerf our gasoline engines this much?
Yeah. It's like, honestly, I don't think it's going to make that big of a difference to keep cracking down.
Right.
You know, when electric cars are proliferating that much. And I mean, there's still the problem with the electric car of charging them, though.
Oh, like charging them and
where that electricity is coming from.
Exactly. It's coming mostly from coal-fired power plants.
Right. Exactly. So you got a little bit of an issue there, you know, but I don't know. But not to change the subject right away, but we are kind of running out of time. I do want to. That is a decent segue into this. This article from Car and Driver, just, are EVs actually environmentally friendly?
Right.
Because we've talked about this plenty of times. And yeah. Pretty much they found a study from this group called FEV who said that the emissions of a small gas car will surpass those of a small EV after roughly 27,000 miles of driving. So, okay, that sounds pretty good. Then,
and that's the emissions from manufacturing the EV.
Right.
Okay.
The emissions are actually higher just because of getting all these precious metals and stuff for the batteries and all that good stuff.
Right.
But that does actually, unfortunately, these calculations assume an EV is being charged on a grid powered 50% by renewable energy and 50% by non-renewables. Unfortunately, in the U.S., only about like 15 to maybe 20%, depending on your area, is powered by renewables.
Most of it's coal in the U.S.
Right.
And even from where I'm from in Tennessee, we had the Tennessee Valley Authority with a series of hydroelectric dams powering you know, that area. Still, most of the electricity used in that area is coming from coal.
Right.
And most areas don't have that level of renewable energy production infrastructure at all. So it's interesting. 27,000 miles. That's about 2.5 years of your average motorist,
right?
Before it's offset.
And that was so that's you know hopeful about the EVs actually being clean. But the thing is that breaks down is the fact that they did that calculation on 50%.
Right.
So okay, probably up that to about 36,000 to 40,000 miles because.
Yeah.
We don't have that much renewable.
Which at that point, you're talking about 4 to 5 years of your average person driving every day before they've offset that.
Right.
And then we're about 3 years away from the end of that battery's life cycle.
Exactly. And that was for small ones. They calculated for even for large EVs, the offset wouldn't be till 60,000. And that was on their 50-50 rule.
Wow.
So we're talking well into the time that those batteries are probably going to need to be replaced, which is one of the biggest... the biggest causes of electric car, quote unquote, greenhouse gas emissions.
Right. Is the production of those batteries.
Right. So that doesn't really bode all that well.
No, it doesn't. I mean, and this goes back to what we said last podcast. This is the biggest issue with electric cars is how difficult it is and how expensive it is to replace these batteries.
Right. Because if an EV, a large EV is going to produce the same amount of carbon emissions as, say, let's compare, I guess, let's say in large ones. So, I don't know, let's do the F-150 Lightning versus a regular F-150.
Right.
Okay, if it takes 60,000 miles at the bare minimum to meet that.
Right.
Like, and then after 60,000 miles, you just throw that thing in the trash.
Right, and you have to throw the whole truck away.
Right.
You can't, like, because replacing the battery on, once that truck's seen the depreciation of 60,000 miles of driving, which is, you know, 7 years of ownership.
Right.
Then if they give you a $20,000 repair bill, you're like, well, I might as well just get a new Lightning.
Right.
I might as well put that down payment on a new Lightning. And you can't sell it used. They're worth dirt cheap used because, you know, even if you trade it into the dealership, it's just going to hit the automotive auction. It's going to end up, you know, being parted out and a lot of it's going to end up being e-waste.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, this isn't an iPhone, you know, it's not right. A few ounces of e-waste.
No, this is a ton.
It's a ton, even once you strip it.
So it would have been better to buy a gas powered F-150 and drive it for 120,000 miles.
Yep. because it would have run that long.
Right.
You know, and it's an F-150, so sure, you might have to replace the starter three times.
Right. Yeah, I mean, there could be repair bills for sure. But, and don't get me wrong, this, I'm not being all, you know, huff and puff and down on this, because depending on where you are, Washington State is 78% renewables. Vermont's 100% renewables.
Wow, that's impressive.
Yeah, I didn't know that about Vermont. Go yeah. Vermont. You know, then that changes the equation.
Yeah.
But there's just, that's my big, big thing about electric cars is people buy a $150,000 Tesla.
Yes.
And think they're saving the world.
Right.
And it's like, no, you're not. Right. Sorry, that alone isn't going to help anything right now. We need to change the whole infrastructure grid. We need to change, you know, how we view ownership of cars.
Yes.
And this throwaway culture that we have.
Right. We need to change how companies are building these to be maintained.
Yes. Right to repair bills need to be passed, you know, so that way, like, the Nissan Leaf battery thing isn't on a fucking lockdown.
Right. Yeah. It shouldn't be on a lockdown.
Because now there's going to be a bunch of Leafs going to the junk. That's why they're going for so cheap, because nobody fucking wants them anymore.
Right.
They're going to go to a bunch of junkyards. And what good did that 40,000 mile Leaf do to the environment?
No, it by the time it offset itself, it became waste again.
Yeah. So,
yeah,
it's a bigger picture of trying to actually help the environment. And yes, electric cars will eventually be the thing, especially once we're on all renewables, then we're fucking golden.
Right.
But we need something in the interim, which is where I always go back to e-fuels.
The e-fuels, and, you know, I'm a little selfish about the e-fuels, because for me, that's not interim.
Right.
For me, that's a way to keep myself happy and my hobby going
for
the rest of my life.
Yeah.
But you're right, that would be great. And if we could just loosen up what manufacturers are expected to do with fuel economy and emission standards on their gasoline-powered vehicles until we can transition to e-fuels and electric cars, that could help.
It could. I mean, honestly, I was thinking about this the other day. If we want to actually have the 100% impact on the emissions, the thing to do right now is to stop producing cars completely.
Right.
For like 6 years until battery tech catches up. And then do it. It's
but then used car prices would end up just in the stratosphere.
Oh, yeah. I'm not saying it's necessarily like the best idea.
Yeah.
Or like as far as economy wise. But if we want to actually do the best thing we can for the environment, that's the best thing to do. No, don't make electric cars. Don't make gasoline cars. Make no cars.
Right.
Because it's I was thinking about this the other day, and I had to look this up on Wikipedia. It's the weight calculation. So this, it actually has to do with interstellar travel.
Okay.
Basically, by Robert L. Forward, who was the physicist who argued this. Basically, if we took our greatest technology, rocket ship technology, wanted to travel to another star, it's more worth it for us to wait and just build nothing for 50 years. Because in 50 years, the technology is going to be so much better and our rocket ship so much faster that by the time we launched a rocket ship 50 years later, it would overtake the one that we initially launched and get there sooner.
Wow. Is there a cap on that? Could you say in 100 years it would still overtake the rocket that launched in 50?
It depends on how fast technology is advancing.
Yeah.
You know, it really depends on a lot of speculation of what we can be in the future.
Right.
Like, what technology will we have in the future? We don't know. We can see curves and, you know, trends and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it's like, you know, if you're, and I apply that to the battery technology. Like, right now, is it really worth investing in all this stuff that's going to become e-waste?
Right.
When in the, 10, 15 years in the future, we'll have so much better stuff. And we'll have just, I thought about this with, racing electric cars, too. Like, if I want to get into electric car racing, is it even worth buying a car right now?
Right.
Because in 15 years, they're going to be so much more surpassed.
Right. Like the Model 3 that Dai Yoshihara's team couldn't get to work going up Pikes Peak.
Right.
They put a lot of money, a lot of effort, and a lot of time in that. And because of the caveats and restraints of current technology, they were unable to do it successfully.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is interesting. But what I wonder is, if we don't produce, do we still learn the lessons that advance the technology?
This is true. Yeah, that's a very good question.
Because like, trial and error is how we get there.
Right. Yeah, because there has to be a demand for, you know, people to put money into investment in order to get their money back out.
Right.
Capitalism.
Yeah.
You know?
There has to be the demand, and there has to be the mistakes, not just of one company doing research and doing predictive models, but of selling the same car to 3,000 people, and two of those 3,000 doing just the most ridiculous thing with the car that you would have never predicted and breaking it in a way that we never would have seen coming.
Right.
So that we could learn to keep that from happening, putting it in the hands of humanity. That is interesting. That's getting into the philosophical discussion of right. What drives us to make things better and whether we can do that in a vacuum.
That's very true. I didn't actually think about that from that standpoint. But because the way I was looking at it was, okay, even if we do a gasoline ban by 2035,
right?
You know, we do that worldwide, let's say, only electric cars by 2035.
Yeah.
The average age of the car on the road today is like 16 years or 17 years.
Wow. After living in the Denver area, that's so surprising.
Yeah, I mean, areas are, you know,
right,
going to be different. You go back to the Midwest and cars are a lot older. You go right. to the Springs, cars are a lot older.
Yeah, but here people get a new car every 5 years.
Right.
Yeah, and yeah, but you're right. In Tennessee, like, I used to see those old square body Chevys running around basically my whole life.
Right, right.
And now they're considered collector's items.
Yeah, I don't know when the G-body became a collector item. I'm kind of sad about that, but because now the prices are going up on G-bodies of all things.
Right, you used to be able to get one for $800.
Yeah, easily. But my point is, okay, so even if all cars sold by 2035 are electric, that's going to take us another 15. Let's even say incentives and stuff drive that down to like 10 years. You know, that's another 10 years until the majority, probably, we're looking at 2040 to 2045 before the majority of cars on the road are electric.
Yeah, before it's even just tipped over the 50%.
Probably, yeah. You know, and by that time, and hopefully by that time, we have a lot more renewables. But as of this time, renewables are not keeping pace with the current demand of electricity as it is.
Yeah.
Once we start charging all our cars off of it, we're going to be firing up those old abandoned fucking coal fire power plants just to keep up with demand.
The ones we had to shutter because they were dangerous for everyone around them.
Right?
Yeah.
So I'm not saying we're doomed.
I mean, but that does seem to be where we're headed, right?
Right. It seems like unless we take a super drastic measure, like just be like, we're not producing any more cars, we're limiting gasoline, we're shutting down, like, first of all, individual drivers' cars aren't like, you know, the only thing producing greenhouse gas
it's
emissions.
Commercial stuff that's producing most of it.
Right. So unless we're ready to pay a ton more money for local goods and
which no one is.
No one is.
Right. Because it's already too expensive to live right now in most parts of the country.
Yeah.
Especially for people our age.
And then there's another problem is as electric cars, hopefully they become a lot cheaper, but like they're expensive items right now where a lot of people only like wealthy people can afford.
Right.
And the general population, you know, working class can't afford. And there's just the more I think about this, the more complicated it gets. And the more it pisses me off when I see a Tesla driver just all smug about saving the planet.
Yeah.
It's like, no, there's so much more to this.
Yeah.
There's so much more.
Yeah. Than even just your single carbon footprint. And, you know, I get the whole philosophy of be the change you wish to see in the world. And like, oh, well, I'm reducing mine to set a good example. But it's like, but you're also not. Like, you bought this Tesla. You're not going to keep it long enough to offset its production.
Yeah, no.
It's going to end up in a junkyard because if you buy a $150,000 car, you're not the type of person to hang on to that car.
Right.
You're the type of person to buy another $150,000 car, $200,000 car, wherever inflation puts it in a few years when your lease runs out or when you get bored.
I mean, at least we do have companies like EV West that are taking those old Teslas or the smashed up Teslas and converting older cars into electric. You know, they're doing the classics and stuff, which is really cool.
That is really cool. And I hope one day we can do a religion of speed build.
Yes.
I want to build an electric something.
Yes. Yeah. I the Nissan Pulsar swap has just been in my head now because I'm like, that's perfect.
That is perfect.
Because it's not a race car. You don't really care if it's that fast.
And I wonder how many cells you actually need. Do we need 12 cells?
Yes.
You want to go the full battery pack?
Yeah, I want to go full battery pack. Because I'd probably use a first gen Leaf, and those only made like 150 horsepower.
Okay. Okay.
Even with the full charge pack, you know. So I don't really want to limit that horsepower anymore than I have to. So, but yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think we're just, things are going to have to go a little more drastic to get to where we need to be to not, you know, see the really bad effects of climate change.
I feel like they're just, that we as humanity won't make those changes.
Right.
Like, we will see the really bad effects of climate change.
Yeah, because even then, what we're talking about is the EU and North America doing these changes. Meanwhile, China and India, they're just...
Right.
They don't give a shit.
And any other emerging economy can't afford.
All of Africa is trying to bring themselves up to a modern economy.
Right.
And meanwhile, we're trying to tell them no about...
It's like, no, you're polluting too much. It's like, but you polluted for decades. Yeah, but we learned our lesson.
You polluted so much that you brought all your e-waste and your fucking old clothes to this fucking country and dumped them here.
Yeah, there's just a pile of e-waste.
Yeah.
Yeah, hell, China has stopped buying our plastic.
Yeah. They stopped buying our garbage a long time ago.
Yeah. Like, they used to buy our plastic. They stopped buying it. And now it's filling up the oceans.
Yeah.
Which is, it's insane. I know we're not a recycling podcast, but I heard this story about how it's actually better for the environment to throw certain things away than it is to try to recycle them.
And I believe it. And some plastic, things are just like hard to recycle.
Right. Like aluminum, steel, recycle as much as you can, any metal. But plastic ends up being shipped out to places that are supposed to have plastic recycling programs, many of which don't anymore.
They're
so
piling
we
up.
Put it on a barge, we ship it across the ocean. That's where a lot of the plastic in the ocean came from.
Yeah, just falling off barges.
Yeah, us trying to be benevolent and ship our plastic to a place that can recycle it when half of it blows off into the ocean on their way there.
I heard, I don't want to butcher this, so I'm going to probably go on the low end of what my brain is trying to remember. But I'm pretty sure it's like 200,000 pounds of plastic a minute entering the ocean.
Entering the ocean.
Yeah.
Yeah, 200,000 pounds.
Yeah.
Which plastic is a lightweight material.
Yeah, right.
So that's an insane amount of material entering the ocean.
And I may be exaggerating that number. For whatever reason, my brain wanted to say 2 tons, in fact. But I don't know. Maybe if it's 20 pounds per minute.
Yeah. 20 pounds of, I mean, think
that's
about how many pounds, think about how many empty plastic, you know, I've got a Mountain Dew bottle in my hand.
Right.
How many empty Mountain Dew bottles this would take to make 20 pounds.
Right.
Just, I mean, this is just a few ounces.
And yeah, now imagine you see somebody pouring a giant box of plastic bottles into the ocean every minute. You would say something
about
that.
You would. And we can recycle plastic.
Yeah.
Rather easily. We just don't have the facilities to do it because our country can just produce new materials. And to us, it doesn't seem like the right thing to do, you know, the economically feasible thing to do.
Well, then you also have the problem with recycling plastic using electricity. And what does the electricity come from? Coal.
Man, it's just like you can't win.
You can't win. No, that's what I'm saying. The more I think about this, you can't win.
All right, so a giant magnifying glass that we use to just heat up a smelter only on sunny days.
Yeah.
And we use that to melt our plastic down, which we then use to make bricks to build tiny houses.
Okay, okay. We're solving the housing crisis as well.
Right, right, because we got to do something with all the plastic we built, and lumber's too expensive.
Yes, right.
Yeah.
And concrete apparently is like the worst greenhouse gas emitting construction material we have.
So I didn't know that.
Yeah, no, like we can't use concrete.
Wow.
Now, yeah.
Okay. Which is mostly just made of sand anyway.
Yeah, I don't know the specifics, but I know concrete is just fucking terrible for greenhouse gas emissions.
Yeah, but we consider that to be like the most basic construction material we have.
Yeah, we live in concrete jungles. Like, that's the whole thing.
Yeah, and even the houses that are made of wood and these renewable plastic bricks many times have concrete foundations.
Right. I said it a couple podcasts ago. Like, if you want to be the most environmentally friendly person you can... Ironically, build a log cabin and drive a 20-year-old Corolla.
There you go.
And live off the land, I guess, is what we're doing now.
Yeah, I still like the giant magnifying glass idea. I want to explore this. harness the harness, because I mean it's hot enough here anyway,
right?
There's certain rooms you can just leave plastic in Colorado and on a sunny day and just melt. Yeah.
Oh man.
But I have seen those videos of there's a company in Africa that is melting down used plastic to make bricks.
Yeah.
And they're using that as a housing material.
I mean, good, but then you have to worry about the chemicals in plastic seeping into the water supply.
Because you're melting down a petroleum product.
Yeah, and there's the chemicals they put in plastic to make it last and make it colored and all that good stuff. They seep into the groundwater.
So then that pollutes that area.
No matter what you tell me, I'm going to give you some dollar bullshit right now.
Not in an optimistic mood today.
No, apparently I'm not. I'm trying to figure out how I can still be a car guy and not, you know, burn the world to the ground. Or just how the world's not going to burn to the ground in general. And that is why I am big on e-fuels, because I do think that is a good interim, like I was saying earlier, while everybody is catching up to the electric grid, while people are catching up to that kind of stuff. I think that can, you know, be a good stopgap to help us reduce carbon emissions as is right now. That's one part of the solution. And then renewables. We need more solar. We need more wind.
Yeah. Geothermal. Yeah.
Please. We have the core of the earth produces more energy in a day than humanity has ever used ever, period.
Wow. If we could just tap into that without creating an apocalyptic situation.
Right.
It's like, we're going to drill to the center of the earth. Why? To save the earth.
We don't have to drill to the center even. We just got to go a little ways down.
Just get down below those tectonic plates.
Just into the lava flow, basically.
So we've got to put stuff in the Mariana Trench.
Yeah. That'd produce some freaking electricity, man.
Yeah.
But we need to do a lot more than just buying a Tesla. That's all I'm saying. Buying a Leaf and driving it for 30,000 miles and then selling it for an eighth of the price you paid for it.
Yeah, the Leaf thing really irritates me, because I feel like the Leaf might be the worst. I don't know what the Chevy Volt and Bolt respectively.
I don't really know much about those,
but the Leaf is the affordable electric car, has been for some time. And it's, as it's aged, it's really shown the issues we've had with producing electric vehicles. Tesla is what people think of when they think electric cars. Most people are never going to be able to afford a Tesla.
No.
The Leaf was the electric car for the people.
Yeah.
And it's proving to be a bigger issue in its age. Now that we've got 10-year-old Leaves, they're not holding up to what we wanted them to see.
Right.
We wanted to see out of them, I should say.
Yeah, it's like when a gasoline car can go 300,000 miles.
Yeah.
Which, you know, is a bit of a exaggeration for some gasoline cars, but I see 180,000-200,000 mile cars all the time these days.
Yeah, the Jeeps you hate working on.
Well, no, those get to like 120.
They get to 120 and then they're done.
Yeah, they're done-ski. But no, in general, you know, and if electric cars are only making it to 100 before they are so diminished in value, even because people are so afraid of replacing the batteries,
right,
that that's not worth holding on to and go get a new one. Yeah. You know, it's just like, or they just end up in scrap.
Yeah.
You know, that's a huge issue.
And if they had bought, you know, an Altima instead of a Leaf.
Right.
The Altima would still be running.
Well, let's go Camry.
Well, I was just saying, because it's Nissan for Nissan. But
oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. If they had bought it. Yeah, I mean, because nobody's going to argue that a Civic, Corolla, Camry, or Accord will run for 300,000 miles if you take care of it.
Yeah, no, that's a given.
Yeah, but you could buy like a lower cost. Like, you know, I don't want to go lower than Altima because I don't think a Lancer could quite do it.
Right.
You know, and the American offerings, no.
No.
But, you know, you could buy, you know, a cheaper gasoline-powered car and it would run.
Yeah.
For longer than the life of that electric Leaf.
Yep. So, like I said before, I'm not anti-electric car. In 20 years,
yeah,
we're all going to be driving electric and it's going to be great. And hopefully we'll be reversing the effects of climate change. But we need to do something in the interim. So
we do, because it's just making things worse right now.
Right. So I will say, as a car guy, been thinking about this. One, things we can do. One, I'm guilty of this too. Catless downpipes on turbo cars. I think we need to stop doing that.
The catless pipes. My 240 has no cat, and yeah,
right.
It's just because cats are so expensive.
They are,
especially now with the car protections.
Yeah, it's. Which then you're getting into this whole thing of, now you're making it way harder for people of low income to afford a car and keep a car on the road.
Yes.
So now they have to go buy a new car that they can't afford.
Right.
And
or they've got to drive to Wyoming and get a straight pipe.
Right.
You know, it's crazy. Like if you're a Honda Odyssey owner, you know, they're minivans. Minivans don't tend to hold their value very well.
Right.
And your cat gets stolen, because they frequently do out from under Odysseys, because they're efficient enough to still have quite a bit of precious metal in there, even if they're 15 years old.
Or your Prius.
Or your, yeah, I mean, God forbid your Prius. But people would steal cats from underneath those, and if you've got an older one, it's $6,000, $5,000 to $6,000 if you drove to a dealership and said, I need a new cat.
Right.
And the car is worth two. So you're left with either pollute like crazy, or you go to another state where you can get a cat that's slightly less environmentally friendly for a third of the price.
Yeah. So that kind of is a point I was thinking about too, is like, to actually be environmentally friendly is very expensive. It is cheap to just, you know, pollute, basically.
It is.
That's the default.
Garbage is cheap.
Right. So yeah. If you want to be environmentally friendly, you actually have to be conscious about it. Like, hey, let's say you want to not eat as much red meat, because red meat production is a big greenhouse gas emissions.
Right.
Well, okay. Red meat is cheap. It's calorie dense.
Right.
Like, if you have to feed a family and you don't make a lot of money, like, yeah, you might not have an option besides doing things like red meat.
Yeah.
You know, it takes a lot more vegetables to feed a family.
It does. It does. And you have to eat more frequently.
Right.
Yeah. And so, you've got to get fresh produce, which is difficult and expensive.
So my point, what was my point with that? The point was, it's expensive to be environmentally friendly. So if we all want to be environmentally friendly, then we have to fix the economy too.
Yeah.
We can't do this wealth disparity thing.
And then you know, getting from economics back into politics, there are people making money off of the way things are right now.
Right.
And those people spend money on politicians to keep things the way they are.
I feel like we're slowly devolving into a conspiracy theory podcast, because we're like, it's all connected. Yeah. But like,
but it is.
Yeah.
It is.
It's all connected.
Economics is connected to every aspect of life.
Right.
In a capitalist society, even in, you know, a socialist or communist society, economics drives what people do, what they think about.
Right.
And what they're capable of.
Yeah.
And you can have the best intentions. You can have, you know, the purest heart. But if you don't have the wherewithal or the means to make that happen, then you're in the same area that someone who doesn't give a shit. You're in the same place that they are.
Right. Yeah. I mean, policy changes need to happen, because people won't and can't sometimes do things otherwise.
Right.
So.
Yeah. And, you know, but the policy changes, you know, they meet the same wall of feasibility.
Right.
Like,
that's what I was talking about with electric cars. Like,
exactly.
Like, that's a good idea, but because our grid isn't there, it's not a feasible way to counteract carbon emissions as of this moment.
Yeah. I mean, one of the original drafts of the Green New Deal had all aviation gas out of use by the end of this year.
I mean, yeah, that would be great.
Right, because it's low lead gas. It does pollute.
Yeah.
But 90% of the American aviation fleet burns it.
Right? So, yeah, no, it's a hard problem we have ahead of us.
It is.
But
there's no easy solution.
There is none. But I don't know. Human, also, I go back to not end this podcast on a bummer.
Right.
Humans invented flight, and it was only like 40 or 50 years later, or what? How long was it?
So the first flight in Kitty Hawk, North Carolina was, I think, like 1914, something like that.
Yeah. And when did we put a guy on the moon?
In the late 60s.
Okay.
Yeah.
That is how fast we can change things.
50-year span.
50-year span. We went from not being able to fly to being on the moon.
Yeah.
So I truly do think that human ingenuity will figure this out. We will get there. It might just be a little rough on the way.
Yeah. But in the meantime, you know, keep lighting up those tires.
Yeah. I mean, you might as well.
Yeah.
That's ground pollutant anyways. That settles to the ground.
Yeah. It's because you have to stay happy.
Yeah. Yeah. You have to keep, like, that's why I didn't want to end this on a bummer, because you have to keep a positive vibe about all this, or else you'll just fall into that nihilism we were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
And not care. And then nothing gets done. Nothing gets changed.
And it's easy to give in to that.
Right.
You know, and it's difficult to stay positive.
It is. This world makes it pretty difficult, but luckily we do have things like racing. We have the people that we, you know, hang out with in the racing community. You know, when you're out there, you're not thinking about this kind of stuff. You're just having a good time, and that's kind of what you need.
I look forward to forgetting about all this at Grid Life next weekend.
Yes. So we will be, to completely change the subject, we will be at Grid Life next weekend. I will be racing in Club TR. Car is all prepped. New brakes, tune, spark plugs, and we'll see what that does. There's going to be some heavy competition in Club TR. So,
and I'll be in the pits meeting people. If you feel like, when Matt's out racing, if you like coming up and talking to somebody, I'm the other guy with curly hair.
Yep. Yep, just look for the orange Fiesta. Probably the only orange Fiesta ST there. And yeah, come by and say hi.
Yeah, well, hopefully we'll get a chance to meet those Gears and Gasoline guys, too.
Yeah, yeah, I want to converse with them, and I'm going to be racing against them, so
we'll
see how I do.
Yeah.
That car is crazy built, though. I don't see myself beating it.
Well, you said you're happy with a podium, right?
I'm happy with a podium.
And you got a new Stage 1 Cobb tune to throw at this, so.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see if it's enough. We'll see. So we'll see you guys out there, and we've been going on way too long, so let's end this.
All right, let's end as much as I'd love to talk to you guys all day.
Right. So I want to thank the band Wheels for the use of our theme song. You can find them at wheelstheband.bandcamp.com, and you can find us on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube. Search for Bulligion of Speed. Look for the Praying Hands logo. You can find us. And until next time, guys, peace out.